You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshie on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
This call may be recorded or transcribed.
Talking to my people, yeah. Talking to the ghetto, ghetto. You're out there floating on your own. Somehow occupy your mind. You fight the hurt when you're alone. Seems as though reality dropped another life at your feet. Now that you face another day, it leaves you feeling like you'd like to take it home. Your eyes see things and say, no way. Feels like there's an enemy in everyone who loves you. People, ghetto people, what are you gonna do? Tell me, do you really think that the government cares about you? No, they don't. Gonna turn to you. Listen to me, I'm trying to tell y'all, yeah. Ghetto people, oh yeah.
Where you wanna be?
Where you wanna
tell
be?
Tell me why your life is.
Tell me.
I'm running like a rare disease.
I'm running like a rare disease. Ghetto people,
stop giving up your self-respect.
Stop it,
ghetto people.
Show some love for yourself, people. Life can take some strange turns on you. Living with the things thrown at you. Leave you in the cold with a day that's not worth having. Chances are the shortfalls of greed won't ever come to feel what you need. When what you really want inside can only come from you. The day will come when all of your pride leaves you standing around looking like, what am I gonna do? You have those feelings deep inside, a strange kind of sadness you can never get used to.
Ghetto people, what are you trying to prove?
Come on, tell me, y'all.
Do you really think that the world gives a damn about you?
Hell no, it don't.
Ghetto people,
who you gonna turn to?
Who you gonna turn to?
Listen, people, you better take a look at yourself, yeah. Talking to my people.
You're living like you're living,
living like you're living,
caught up in the make-believe,
lost in your dream.
Ghetto people,
stop giving up your self-respect.
Stop it, y'all.
Talking to my people, yeah. Life can take some strange turns on you. Living with the things thrown at you, leave you in the cold with a day that's not worth having. Chances on the shortfalls of greed won't ever come to feel what you need when what you really want inside can't.
like a rare disease. Ghetto people,
stop giving up yourself.
Stop doing what you're doing to yourself, young. You got to learn to love yourself.
You are listening to African Perspectives, where we review the issues of our day from an African worldview and African-centered perspective. This program is unapologetically African. It is a custom in the African tradition to ask elders for permission to speak, having been granted permission. To our ancestors, whose shoulders we stand on, to our elders, whose shadows we walk in, I greet you, my dear brothers and sisters, in the language of one of the greatest civilizations on this planet. It gave the world the basic disciplines of knowledge of science, math, architecture, music, writing, law, religion, you name it, we did it. The Greeks called it Egypt, but they called themselves Kemet, and Kemet means land of the blacks. I greet you all in the Kemetic language, the word of peace, Hotep. It is truly an honor and a privilege to pour libation because we truly do stand on the shoulders of those who came before us. We're going to use water because water has no enemies. Water is the great cleanser, the great purifier. Everything on the planet that lives, it needs water, from a tiny microscopic organism to a tall redwood tree. We pour water into the earth to invoke the spirits of our ancestors, and we say the word Ashe, which simply means so be it. So we pour this libation to God for all that God has done and for all that God will do. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to Mother Africa, birthplace of all humanity, everyone who has lived, everyone who will live in the future. We all have a common ancestral root in Africa. We pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. I mentioned Kemet in the opening. Kemet was the height, the apex, the zenith of African high culture. But there were others as well, as Timari, Punt, and Nubia. So we pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa, of Ghana, Mali, Songhai, Benin, Great Zimbabwe. Civilizations that were flourishing and growing while Europe was in a medieval or dark age. The University of Sankore at Timbuktu, an outstanding educational institution. So we pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the Ma'afa, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the Infakani, the great tragedy, uprooted out of Africa. Our brothers and sisters lay a carpet along the Atlantic Ocean. We're in North America, South America, Central America, and throughout the diaspora. So we pour this libation to our brothers and sisters who suffered the Ma'afa, the Infakani, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the great tragedy. We pour this libation in their honor and in their memory. We do not know their names, but because of them and their sacrifice, we are here. So we say Ashe. We pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. If you ever heard me do a libation, you will know that we were not slaves. I repeat, we were not slaves. We were captives. What does a captive want to do? Get free. So we pour this libation to all those men and women who fought against enslavement. In fact, I maintain that some of us are more of a slave today than we were in our initial captivity, because some of us are a slave to vice, to corruption, to drugs, sex, and violence. So we pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement: Gabriel Prosser, Nat Turner, Dingmark Vesey, Harriet Tubman. We always resisted, and we will always resist. So we pour this libation in the name and the honor of those men and women who fought against our captivity. We pour this libation to those unborn, those young men and women who will once again lead us back on the stage of human history as a free and proud and productive people. We sashay. We pour this libation to brotherhood and sisterhood, together for the union of family. We need each other. We don't have good family life. There's a saying: conditions shape conduct and consciousness. The conditions in our community are bad. The conduct towards each other is not good. Because why? We lack consciousness. And consciousness is more than just awareness. Consciousness is a deeper understanding of who you are historically, who you are culturally. So once we begin to understand the importance of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. Brothers and sisters, let us all say, Ashe, Ashe, Ashe. Shemhotep means go in peace.
Isante Sana means thank you. Good morning, African world. You are listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com, and blacktalkradionetwork.com. And I am your host, Baba Oshi, Hotep family. Hope everything was well with you today. Hope you're going to have a good day today. It is Valentine's Day, you know, whatever that means. Well, in fact, we'll explain what that means. You know, I got my co-host with me, Brother Irv. Irv, how are you doing this morning, man?
I'm doing fine, Baba Oshi. How are you?
I'm well. Good. Always good to share the mic with you, my brother. We're going to talk today, of course, about the Super Bowl halftime. Super Bowl 69, excuse me. Super Bowl 59.
Yeah.
So Super Bowl 59 halftime program and all the symbolism and all the meanings and so forth. And we're going to try to, you know, deconstruct that or bring some clarity to it. You know, for those of us like myself who didn't have a clue, I didn't really watch it that in depth until I was told about it. I was like, wow, okay. So we'll deal with that. All right.
Yeah.
All right. We're here at African Perspective. We're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., 10 to 12 Central, 9 to 11 Mountain, or 8 to 10 Pacific, or any other time around the world. But if you cannot listen to this program live, you can always go to our archives at timeforanawakening.com. Top of the page, you'll see podcast programs. Hit the drop down, you'll see African Perspectives. Click on that, and there will be programs that are dated, entitled, thanks to our good brother, Brother Kwaku. We appreciate you, man. Other programming we have here on Time for an Awakening, this program, once again, is every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 11 a.m., and all times are going to give our Eastern times. On Monday and Wednesday, this evening and Wednesday evening, from 7 p.m. to 9 p.m., Our Story, Baba Wes Johnson out of New Orleans. Our Story, Baba Wes Johnson out of New Orleans. On Thursdays, from 8 p.m. to 10 p.m., The Black Liberation Movement, Mississippi on the Move, with Brother Patrick Lumumba of the Geronimo Pratt Gun Club on Thursdays from 8 to 10. Sunday, from 5 p.m. to 6 p.m. on Sunday, Pinckney to Pinckney, activist Reverend Edward Pinckney out of Benton Harbor, Michigan on Sunday from 5 to 6. Oh, let me backtrack on Friday at 8 p.m., Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard on Friday. And then Sunday, Pinckney to Pinckney with activist Reverend Edward Pinckney from 5 to 6. And then at 7 p.m. on Sunday, Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. And the number to call is 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. The Inyasasim of Daily Revolutionary Thought. February 13th. It is tradition in African societies that when things get so terrible, the women call for war. Kali Senchin. In our tradition, women have accepted responsibilities for making the final decisions over giving life and calling for death in the extremes of dispute and disorder. They come into this responsibility because of their divine life-giving womb and their enhanced emotional temperament given them in their intimate physical and metaphysical connection with pain caused by death of life that they work so hard to birth and nurse into power. Our men have always understood why African women would be the last to call us to war. As bringers of life, they know more intimately than anyone else what war brings and takes away. of all in our community, they have always the last to call for death. Right now, sisters are calling us to war. This should tell us something. For they have told us there is to be no more suffering of our children, our ancestors, to those to come us, to, excuse me, those to come and us here and now. And without contradiction, they have told us that the suffering of African people can only end through us taking to the battlefield to restore order. They are waiting for us to do more, much more than protest. They rightfully demand action now. They're calling for death to give new life. Do we again have to wait for the Nzingas and the Ya-Asantewas to shame us, to dress in our armor, to forego the critical duties of womanhood for us to stand as men and to do the work of our women's tears have so long called us to do? Affirm, I listen to our mother's cries. Affirm, I listen to our mother's cries. February 14th, war for war, crime for crime, atrocity for atrocity. The Honorable Jean-Jacques Dessalines, the Haitian Revolution, 1804. Jean-Jacques Dessalines. Anyone in reparations movement who is not talking blood debts is not speaking in the interest of our ancestors. For as so many of our true warrior ancestors unequivocally stated, blood debts must be repaid in blood. This applies to all debts required through bloodshed, whether dated or newly acquired. Balance is restored through return of what has taken, the return of equal value, equal sentiment, equal worth, equal pain, equal loss. Inequality substitutes charitable returns which serve the interests and preserve the sanctity of the culprit's ego can never suffice. Without the return of balance through reciprocal equivalent reparations, imbalance prevails, often disguised in the form of a still victimized peace and love. Co-opted reparationists debate simply to keep our focus limited to the lost wages of enslaved Africans, educational vouchers in a racist, dysfunctional labor market, or control over part of a manufacturing industry without distribution rights. But what is the face value of 280 million slaughtered Africans? Is there any equivalent material or privilege that can compensate for genocide? How does one compensate for taking life? Only radical Negroes proclaim that this loss is beyond payment, except through deposits into their consumer accounts. For most crying about reparations, the demand of blood for blood by our actions would end the discussion because it involves doing whatever else does for their wronged ancestors. Affirm, I work for nothing less than equal return. Affirm, I work for nothing less than an equitable return. Brothers and sisters, the Inyasisim of Daily Revolutionary Thought. Very quickly, Ashay. Very quickly, we're going to talk about this day and how this day came about, and then me and Brother Irv are going to jump off into our main discussion, which is, of course, the Super Bowl halftime program. Super Bowl halftime program. We're going to talk about Valentine's Day, how it came about. In the, was that the 5th century? 6th century? I don't know. I think the 7th century. Yeah, 7th century. There's a, in Rome, Claudius is the emperor. Claudius is the emperor, and he does not want his soldiers, you know, to marry. He doesn't want, this, I'm doing a succinct version, y'all, and for sure. He doesn't want his soldiers to marry. And some of them would meet and secretly meet their women and so forth. And then there was St. Valentine who would marry them. And then when Claudius heard about it, he imprisoned Valentine. And the jailer's daughter, once he was, Valentine was later arrested again for continuing to do what he went to do, what he was doing. He was sent to the Emperor Claudius himself. Claudius took a liking to him until Valentine tried to convince Claudius to embrace Christianity, tried to convert him. Okay. And of course, the jailer's daughter was blind, and she was very nice to him, brought him food and so forth. And of course, Claudius beheaded Valentine. But before he died, he wrote her a note. Now, supposedly, too, in this piece, supposedly this is supposed to be real, he prayed for the jailer's daughter to give her sight, and she developed sight, supposedly. And before he was killed, he wrote a note to her. And then the note, all thanking her for her kindness, her tenderness, and so forth. And he signed it, Your Valentine. He signed it, Your Valentine. And supposedly that's how Valentine's Day came about, through the Emperor Claudius and through St. Valentine. No, this is the, I think he was around in the 3rd century. Yes, the 200s. So that's how Valentine's Day came about, you know. And I know that if you have a significant other, and I know that I do, and I know Brother Irv does, and always, they don't mean shit to me, excuse me. but to the women, they, you know, because and I understand that, you know, they have a lot of affection, you know. So I'm going to read a couple of pieces here. The Inyasa Sim, once again. This was back in February 3rd. And it's about how loving compliments should be to one another. I am convinced that the African man will only reach his full potential when he learns to draw upon the strength and insights of the African woman. As I say in the libation all the time, we need each other, African men and African women. You know, we need each other. We express a deep sense of love and humility when we give sincere compliments to one another. African men and women have to relearn how to compliment each other without reading more into it than a altruistic self-love. A compliment to you at the same time is a compliment to me. Your beauty and style are also my beauty and style because you reflect me. We are one. We have to learn to be able to give and accept praise and deserve flattery without readily assuming that the giver is trying to get into my pockets or my bed. Loving people compliment each other. They thrive on making each other feel good about themselves. And I love being African. I do. So,
I'm being African.
I do. I love us. Yeah.
Oh my God. So, that's interesting, Baba Oshi. Really quickly before you get into chop it up, I don't celebrate any holidays. And it's interesting to wean yourself off of these pagan holidays,
right?
Basically, are what they are. Most of them are pagan.
Yeah, well, this is truly.
But I've been indoctrinated to celebrate these holidays. In other words, Kaboshi, if you're standing in a room and everybody's doing one thing, and you're saying, "No, I'm not going to do it," then it seems as though something is wrong with you.
Oh, no doubt.
She's like, you are.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, no yeah. Brother, you ain't cool, brother. You ain't hip. You ain't down with the program. And other. And what you're saying is, why aren't you trying to fit in with what we doing? And then you, and when you ask the question, why are you doing what you're doing? Mm-hmm. And therein lies the silence. Because they have no idea who St. Valentine is, why it's on the 14th, what is the symbolism behind that, the holiday, and what does it represent?
Supposedly.
It represents what you're told.
Right.
To go to the store and buy chocolate and to buy a night out and buy a denim. Why is it so connected to economics, even when it wasn't
connected
to economics?
I think for some of us who ordinarily do things in a loving way, who take their significant other out for dinner periodically or buy them a gift or something spontaneously, you know, and that kind of spontaneity that they do things and it's happy and they're happy about their lives and their lives together. But, you know, these things, just like the brother who I share a birthday with, you know, Ishaka Musa, Dr. Ishaka Musa Barashango, and his books, Celebrating European Holidays, and what a foolishness that is. And I agree with you, you know. But for women, you know, they love, and, you know, in the chocolate piece, that was Cadbury in the 1800s. He was the first one. You know, there's many, you know, chocolate comes from Africa. They get it all from Africa. And, of course, they make it in Switzerland, England. Cadbury's out of England.
Right.
You know, Nestle's chocolate, all so forth and so on. And they dominate it. They get it, you know, relatively inexpensive. And, of course, they do what they do. And particularly around this time of year. And Cadbury was one of the first ones to make chocolate into a heart-shaped box. Yeah, in the 1800s. Wow. In the 1800s, you know. So it's a commercial thing, no doubt. No doubt.
Oh.
But yet and still, you know, it's a time. It's an exact time to reflect on the love that you have for your significant other. But like I say, most people do it anyways. I know there was a discussion on the news program I watched this morning, you know, where one of the guys said, "Hey, I do this all the time for my wife," you know. I mean, so I'm not tripping on this, but the bottom line is we must learn to love one another, and that's not just February the 14th or any. That's when Valentine was executed, beheaded was February 14th, and then said for, yeah. Started
you know, Baba Oshi, I see where we can, when Urubu wants you to do something, Urubu gives you billboards and commercials and flyers and internet, everything Urubu does to tell you what to do. You don't believe you're being told, but that's exactly what's happening.
No doubt.
It's always messaging.
Yes, no doubt.
And I, you know me, I'm such an individual activist. What I mean by that is I don't go and march to Washington with Al Sharpton, and I don't get signs and walk down the street and stand in front of the police and tell them, cuss them out. What I do is like the other day, I'm in the gym, and to me, today is National Greet African Day, Greet American African Day. In other words, I'm not lying. I was in the gym. I'm about to work out because I have a personal trainer, and I the brother's standing there, and sitting there, you know, got his clothes on. Put his stuff in the locker. I say, "Hey, how you doing, brother?" He says, "I'm doing good." I said, "No, I just wanted to say hi to you because I'm not scared to say hi to another African."
I said.
He started smiling, and me and him had a conversation. Mm-hmm. He asked me, "Why did you do that?" He didn't understand because I'm telling you, bro, out here where I am, black people walk past each other.
Sure.
Like, you know, I better not say that. I don't want these white folks to see me talking to you. Mm-hmm. And I make them speak. Mm-hmm. And believe it or not, brother Oshi, most of the Africans that I meet, American Africans, and I'm weaning myself off of that word, but I want to say American African as without thinking. Mm-hmm. But they're glad to speak to you.
Sure,
they were looking at you, you know, wondering why you're not speaking.
Yeah.
I mean, it doesn't cost anything to wave at someone. I remember when I used to go down south when I was young, people on the porch would wave at you. Mm-hmm. Like, okay, why they waiting?
Right.
Because we all brothers.
Yeah.
And I didn't understand, but the white folks didn't wait.
Yeah.
And I didn't understand that.
Once again, Brother Irvin, as you know, this is individualism, materialism, mm-hmm. greed, mm-hmm. and violence. That's what this society perpetuates. Mm-hmm. Individual. So you don't give a damn about anybody else. You just go about your day, handle your business. You don't care. Wow. Even if your business affects many others, you don't give a damn. It may affect many others adversely. You don't give a damn because you're getting yours. You're getting yours. Mm-hmm. See? I'm sorry, go ahead.
Where did that come from, Baba Ocean? That is not the African way, is it?
No, of course not. It's not the African. Of course not. You know?
Mm-hmm.
That comes out of the evolutionary development of Europeans, of Caucasians, come in that frozen area that they came from, that icebox that they came from. All that you see, the greed, why some people can make now billions of dollars, you know, used to be millions. Now it's billions of dollars.
Billions. Yeah.
And the amount of money a billion is just mind boggling. You could never. And yet you see people like Gates and Musk and so many others who could, with all their money, could do so much for humanity, and yet they do nothing. They don't do a damn thing, but continue to be as greedy as they possibly can be. Now you have all these oligarchs who are in the government, right. and who are influencing government to act and do it in a certain way. This is not a good time. And I know you say it's a good time to leave, and it is, and it isn't. And that's how it is. It's paradoxical. You know, it's contradiction. Right, right. It is a good time, but it ain't a good time. You know?
No, you're absolutely right, Brother Ocean. I can expand on that.
Mm-hmm.
I can expand on that all day long, because when you see less than 1% owning 98, 99% of the wealth.
Yeah.
Let's be perfectly clear. There's always been very, very rich people,
mm-hmm.
but in this particular country, the rich people stayed in their lane. They stayed behind in the background. Now you have the very, very rich out in the front, and this is where animosity starts to grow.
Right.
Because we're fine with them being in the background. I knew that Biden got a ton of money. I knew the Kennedys and all those white folks got tons of money. But we never saw these civilians in this country come out and start making policy, rich people making policy for poor people out in the open. It's usually done behind the scenes. You know, they had a meeting. You wasn't there, because you ain't never going to be invited to that meeting. And they create policy, what they want, who they want to be president, who they want.
Mm-hmm.
And it was fine as long as we didn't see it. But now you have a gentleman from South Africa, a place where apartheid was happening in your face, and he's making policy talking about, he has the power to affect your Social Security, to affect your Medicaid, to affect your day-to-day life, the price of food. And now his businesses depend on raw materials. And Baba Oshie, where do the raw materials come from in the world? They come from Mother Africa. Mm-hmm. All the raw materials you need to send a rocket to the moon or to send a submarine down into the water. Everything you need comes from Africa, from the cobalt to the magnesium to the nickel to the iron. Everything is in Mother Africa. And that's why you're going to see the world turn on Africa. They're going to turn on the appropriation of land in Africa without compensation. They're going to see these things as a direct assault on their brethren. And then watch what happens when you see Caucasians' brethren attack. You'll see a whole different stance, a whole different posturing. But when you see American Africans attack, or you see Africans in the motherland attack, we don't see that type of posturing, because they don't look at us as humans.
you know, Baba Oshie, I could go on and on about this because it's in plain sight now.
Right,
now
it is.
Not hiding anymore.
It is. And it's going to get deeper.
They don't talk in code. They don't talk in code no more. You used to talk in code. Now they just tell you straight out, we're just going to sanction you. And now when Mother Africa says, we don't want your aid, now what do? They pull out the guns. But guess what, Baba Oshie? Everybody got a gun now.
First, one wants
a nuclear bomb, now everybody got a nuclear bomb. Well, first one person wants freedom, now everybody wants freedom. See, and where's your gangsters at? You know, your homosexual gangsters. Where they at? Where's your evangelical gangsters? Everybody got a gang, Baba Oshie. We as American Africans have to stop this integrationist mindset. We're trying our best to be something that we will never fit in. So now everybody's circling their wagon. And we as American Africans need to be with people of like mind that look like us, that are us. Because my brother's in trouble, I'm in trouble. And I'm not going to sit here and say a bunch of cliches. What I am going to say is this current administration is waking us up just as Africa has awakened.
Well, that's what we're going to talk about, because that waking up is part of that halftime program. But let me finish up with this piece here.
Yeah, go ahead.
And on the Valentine's piece. Not really, but it's not really a Valentine's piece. It's love for men and love for women. This is poetess Leslie Henri. And my lady sends me these poems all the time, and I've been reading them, and they're outstanding, of course. This one is for fathers and grandfathers, brothers and uncles, husbands and lovers, cousins, real and play, once and twice and trace removed, neighbors and friends, the sons of our sons, black men. You are loved with the warmth of infinite suns, kissing your skin with such tenderness, such richness. Oh, man. I apologize, family. With such richness, such power, such unwielding grit, with backs and spirits unbroken, you are loved. In quiet, deep sighs, pregnant with jubilation. Every day when you cross our thresholds, when you arrive home, safe and whole, you are loved. When we sit in the arms of your protection and in radiance of your smile, you are loved. With ancestral defiance of not becoming who they want you to be, who they want us to believe, you are loved. You are the revolutionary joy. Black men, you are needed. You are seen. Hold on here. What am I? My hand had hit this thing. And it okay. Black men, you are needed. You are seen. You are respected. Black men, you are loved. Ashe. Apologize about the glitch. But hey, power for the program. On this program, there's always a glitch here and there. But we fight through it and we battle through it because, hey, it's all about bringing that information to our people. We're all about that. We're going to get into the Super Bowl piece. And, you know, I know you're in L.A., Irv, and I know, but you just got there.
Yeah.
You know, but I'm
right.
I know being an observant person that you is, you know. So you know a little bit part of what's going on and some of the intricate stuff that's happening in L.A. with all this division and beefs and so forth. You know, and I think that's the part that has always bothered me because I'm a serious staunch advocate for African Unity. I mean, talk about it all the time. Praise God all the time. We need to unify. The model of this program is Pan-Africanism or perish. Unify or die.
Unify or
die. And so what that means is you squash all of that. You come together, man. You speak positive towards one another, you know. And so, but to me, now that I was comprised, and I didn't think that, I mean, maybe the one jab with Serena Williams, you know, dancing the Crypt dance, supposedly dancing on Drake's grave, I guess, you know, because. And what's funny, I've seen another piece on Facebook where Drake walks out. He says, I can take these shots. And he walks out with, like, he's wearing this, like, bullet dress with these bullet holes in him and smoke coming out the front of his chest and out the back, you know.
Wow.
That I survived this, you know. Yeah. I was like, man, y'all just getting ridiculous with this shit. Just, you know, come to the table, you know. Man. And, you know, and look what happened with the beef back in the 90s. I was in Africa when this happened, when Biggie and Tupac were killed.
Tupac was
beefing. Mm-hmm.
Right.
You know, when they were shot and killed and assassinated, whatever. Just like a brother said, he wasn't assassinated. You just got shot.
Oh, yeah.
You just got shot.
My take on that was when you are dancing and doing a jig for Master, and that's what you're doing when you perform. It really looked so clear when I watched the last Super Bowl halftime show when it was Dr. Dre, Snoop Dogg, and Mary J. Blige. She's out there, and she's the only one out there in her underwear because it was very misogynistic. In other words, they had a bunch of half-naked women shaking their vaginas into the camera. And that and all that was entertainment. And then for Caucasians, it ain't enough for you to sing and dance. We have to have a personal aspect to it. So then the beat, we have to have a beat. If you notice, we're imitating the oppressor. If you notice, the United States always have to have a villain. If you ever notice the shows, it's either the Indians or it's the Muslims or it's the Russians. It's always them versus us.
It's always them versus us. Yeah. You know, and right. of course, we always right.
Oh, of course. So they make us do that in our entertainment. It's not Tupac and Vicky couldn't be homies. They got to have a beef. The beef makes people want to watch them more. And the more you watch me, the more I can sell you. Because if I can get you to everybody to watch a certain thing at one time, then I can have a $30 million commercial for 30 seconds. In other words, so what I'm saying is we're imitating the oppressor with this mindset of competition and not cooperation, with the mindset of individualism. Because, you know, Snoop Dogg and all them, they supposedly have bunches of money. And that's what they've taught me to want in my life, is to obtain money. And when I see people like Elon Musk and Donald Trump, I'm supposed to envy them because they've been able to obtain all this money. But the reality is, Baba Oshi, have you ever seen a great armored truck behind a hearse? You can't take this money with you. And it comes a point where sometimes you can't, money won't spend. When did that happen? That's what's happening in Africa right now. Once the mindset gets off of trying to accumulate money as an individual, I'm a dictator, I got all this money, then things change because you can't move me with cash. That's why Patrice Lumumba was killed, because they couldn't move Patrice Lumumba with money. Mm-hmm. What's the Pan-Africanist before Ibrahim? Santora.
Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about? They couldn't move him with money. Because he understood the game, and it's the same game they've been occasions that they're not smart people. Yeah. They don't come up with a new playbook. They just alter it a little bit.
Thomas Sankara and the issue is that they're hoping that can befall, you know, Brother Ibrahim Touré as well, you know, because they want to kill the spirit of Africa. They want to ultimately kill Africans. And this is something that we consistently, you know, ignore or hope is not true or, you know, find ways to placate to the Caucasian to make sure that it doesn't happen. But no, it is who and what they are. It is them. It is them.
You know. Baba Oshie, when I looked at the halftime show that just went off, I didn't see any underwear, any skin, any big booties, any breasts. Mm-hmm. If you watched it, you didn't see that.
Right.
You didn't see any shiny cars or no people riding on horses. Mm-hmm. You know, like Beyonce came out on a white horse with all this white on with a cowboy hat. You didn't see all those things.
Mm-hmm.
What you saw was people fully clothed. You may not have understood what he was saying because you're older like me. I don't understand this new rap. Slow down so I can hear what you're saying. But I didn't have to hear what he said because it was a visual.
Mm-hmm.
A man made. I heard a quote the other day that said, "If you see art and you see somebody do something that's artful and it makes you question things, then that's art." But if you don't question anything, it's just advertisement. See, I didn't question anything when Snoop Dogg got up there and started singing Gin and Juice or the other boy, Dr. Dre, got up there, Mary J. sang that song. I didn't question anything. If I was young, I may have wanted to buy what she had on. I saw those pretty cars. I may want to buy one of those cars. But when this boy, Kendrick Lamar, did his halftime show, I saw nothing to buy.
Mm-hmm.
I saw a mindset being changed because that's what art does. It changes the way you think. Real art changes the way. And I was thinking when I saw the first thing I saw, I told my wife, I looked up and said, "Baby, ain't no black people on the stage. I mean, ain't no white people on the stage.
Mm-hmm.
Where the white
right.
people?" And I'm conditioned, Baba Oshie. I'm not gonna sit here and act like I'm super all Africana bambata. I'm conditioned. Mm-hmm. That anything you do on this white man's television is going to have to involve this Caucasian, either behind the scenes or up in front of the camera. And when I didn't see any white people, I started zeroing in. I said, mm-hmm. something's going on here. There are no white people in this flag. But what he was saying was that American Africans are the fabric of this country.
Right.
That people who have fought in every war. They fought in every war. You ain't a war they had that we ain't fought in it.
Mm-hmm.
From the Revolutionary War to all of them, the Civil War, we was fighting. Crispus Addison, you know, all this foolishness. And because we were buying into the right. white folks taking this land.
No, because we were constantly being duped. We don't understand that this cracker always lies. He's the liar of liars. You know, what was the thing that the British told us? You fight with us, you know, we'll give you freedom. What was the thing that mm-hmm. the Confederates, you know, told the brothers on the plantation? Well, I'll tell you what: if you fight with us to maintain this, which is of course is foolish on our part to even believe them, if we maintain this, mm-hmm. that we will be free. But that was the situation as well. And then, of course, the Union said, if you fight with us on our side, you know, you will be free. And, of course, the Union won. Yeah. But all that shit didn't happen. And all it didn't mean anything. And to me, saying that this war was about our captivity is bullshit. Because it was not. It was about money. It was about the free labor economy of the South against emerging industrialization of the North. And had to unify that because they didn't give a damn if we were free or not. Lincoln said it himself. If I can solidify this Union without freeing your ass, I do so. And what happened too after it happened? They found some piece of land in the western part of Africa, Liberia, and said, we'll send your ass there. You know, no, there never was the idea of incorporating Africans into this society. But yet, if it were not for Africans in this society, it would not happen the way it has emerged all these years. All the things that we've done, all the things we've invented, all the things we have made contributions to, always denigrated, always believed that somehow we are less than. You know, just like when they developed the patent office. When they developed the patent mm-hmm. office and people came there with their patent, that's just like people said that, stories there that Eli Whitney invented the cotton gin. No, he didn't. No, he didn't. I don't give a damn what you say. Because I don't know the story, but I'm just saying is that we did it because why? We always found a better way to do things. All the mm-hmm. inventions that were created, particularly in the 1700s, 1800s, was because we were in captivity. We were finding a better way to make our lives better. You know? And then, of course, after that, the African genius of the elevator, of, I don't know, there's so mm-hmm. many, so bro, many
the
inventions.
Shopping cart, the street light, yes. elevator, yes. GPS, you name
man,
it.
Man, you name it. The we technology it. Part, yeah. too, is a trip because they don't believe, you know, that we, no, yes, the cell phone, all of this. So I'm saying is that our lives here, and still today, the people who are in the White House don't believe, they believe that this DEI shit, and that came to a funny conclusion with the Caucasian says, what? All these black people dancing? You couldn't have at least one white person? And the brother says, nah, you know, we got rid of the DEI. And all the best dancers were black, so y'all were out.
That's funny. That's
yeah, it is.
Merit.
I love merit. This society has never been a meritocracy. Damn, they don't know merit. And then look at his appointments. Those people, they got those positions. You appointed them to those positions because of merit? No, you appointed them to positions because of racism and their loyalty to your flat, funky, nasty ass. That's why. It's crazy, man.
And Baba Oshie, this is the part that gets me with the Rugu, and I said a Rugu. They send out feelers. They send out little things to see if what'll happen. Like mm-hmm. Trump will say something like so out of socket, we're going to take over Gaza. You know damn well mm-hmm. he's not going to take over Gaza with American troops. Okay, but he says it.
Right.
And then you see Elon Musk throw up a high Hitler salute. and I think they're testing the waters. I do, Baba Oshie.
Yeah.
I think they're just testing the waters to see what we can do, because it's all humorous to them,
mm-hmm.
to Arugu, because at the end of the day, Arugu goes back home and he still has his whole dump truck full of money, which he believes can make him do things. But what's happening now, Baba Oshie, is the United States has never been number one. But in their mind, they want everyone to believe they're still, we're still the CEO of the world. Elon Musk was upset. Somebody wants, Elon Musk now, is going to put sanctions on South Africa. What government does Elon Musk, what was he voted for? I'm just saying, how is this civilian have the power to put sanctions on people in South Africa because they're taking land without compensation?
Well,
that,
he has
that,
the
wait, taking land that was taken from them by
right,
Oshie.
Right.
Let's do some history.
Yeah. but to Caucasians, they have the right to rule the planet. So if I take your land, now it is mine. It's just like that one piece that was very deep. I can't remember exactly which movie it was, where these Caucasians come to this indigenous person and he tells them, you know, this is, I think, the trailer, trying to move them to the Trail of Tears.
Trail
you know?
Tears, yes.
Yeah, you know.
Yeah.
And saying
the
to him,
death
no.
March. That's
right.
The death march.
Yeah. He says, who told you this? Who this is my land. You know, no, I want to move you to a different place. And you, no, this is my land. You know, I don't know. It's the arrogance of it, but the history of it is sad and pathetic. Not for Caucasians, because they romanticize it. They put that different spin on it. You know, their manifest destiny, the glory of it, you know, the great things that they're
God
doing,
told sanctioned, to do
right, sanctioned by God, you know. But let me let me take a break. Let me come back from the break. Yeah. I'm going to play a piece from the halftime program, and we'll get off into some dialogue, and then hopefully some brothers and sisters will want to call in. And of course, you call in by dialing 215-490-9832, 215-490-9832. And we're going to break down for the I'm going to play some Luther. This is being a day of love. I'm going to play some Luther. I think there's no better balladeer for sisters to be talking about love than Luther, man. Luther is cold. Did you see the documentary on Luther on?
I saw that.
Yeah.
A lot of things I didn't know, Baba Oshie. Yeah. I didn't know he had a stroke. I didn't know he had a heart problems with the family and his genetics. His family, his mother buried two of her children, I think, from what I understand.
Yeah.
I didn't know that. I didn't know Luther went through all that. But, you know, medical conditions are very private.
Right.
That's not public. You may be public, but your medical
records should be. It should be. You know.
And yes, it should. And Baba Oshie, that's why people are sleeping on this boy Elon. Mm-hmm. Elon has access to the treasury. What does that give him access to? And the health.
Oh, man.
So he's got access to your health records.
Listen, man, he has total access. Because, Donald Trump got all this money from him, $100 million. Mm-hmm. Donald Trump understood what Elon Musk could do in their conversations, how he could make him win the election through SpaceX, how they can siphon off votes here. That's why I'm saying nobody really charged Trump and saying, what are you talking about that people don't have to vote for you when everybody's saying that the election is too close to call? But here on a Thursday before the election, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, 5 days before the election, and you're saying, you don't have to go there. You don't have to go to the polls. I've already won. But nobody said, how is this possible? Nobody put him in question.
He said that.
He said it on Fox News. He said it publicly. You don't have to vote for me. I've already won. I already have all the votes. I already have all the votes I need. Brother Irv, he won the popular vote. He won all of the battleground states.
All the electoral college.
All the a felon, a convicted felon, a person who had tried to overthrow the government. This is insane. Look what's happening. These people are saying, we're going to eliminate this. We're going to eliminate that. This is insane. You know, Irv, I can't wait to get the hell up out of here.
I wish you go ahead because I'm right behind you.
I hear you, brother.
It's a whole bunch of us. Mm-hmm. You're not alone.
No, not at all.
You're not alone. It's a bunch of us that want to get up out of here. They just want a level of insurance that they're going to be safe. That's it. Just be safe. And we can work the rest of it out. And as long as I don't have to get a gun and shoot every day, I'm fine. I can work. I can make my money. I can get some land. We can do things and make it happen for us.
Mm-hmm.
But what we have to do before we do all that is understand that we're in a war. As black people, you're born into a war. You're born into trauma, because this country will never ever give you anything.
No.
So let's stop asking for something. If we're going to do it, let's take it.
Yeah.
You have to imitate your oppressor when it comes to your equality. Bubba, you got to go to a break. I don't want.
Yep. All right,
going,
my brother. Yes,
know.
Sir. Let's try to do this.
All right.
All right. Thank you, Brother Irv. Appreciate that, man.
Yeah, this is interesting.
It is. It really is, man.
Very interesting, bro. Very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Very interesting.
Right.
You got Lethal queued up. What you going?
All right. I sure know. Let's do this. All right. Brothers and sisters listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on TimeForAnAwakening.com and BlackTalkRadioNetwork.com. We're going to be right back. You stay with us.
You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshi on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at TimeForAnAwakening@gmail.com.
At your feet, all that I own, you've been so good to me. If this world were mine, I'd give you the flowers, the birds, and the bees, and be your love beside. That would be all I need if this world were mine. I'd give you anything. If this world were mine, I would make you a king. With wealth untold, you could have anything. If this world were mine, I'd give you each day so sunny and blue. And if you wanted the moonlight, I'd give you that too. This world were mine, no, oh, baby, I'd give you anything. Oh, baby, you're my inspiration, and there's no hesitation when you want me, honey. Just call me.
No, baby, you are my consolation. And I feel so much sensation when I'm in your arms.
When you squeeze me.
Yeah, the way that you do. Every sky would be blue as long as you're loving me, baby. Oh.
When I'm here in your arms, life is so wonderful, my love.
Pretty loving, honey. Keep on loving me, baby. Whoa. You know I need you, honey. You know I need you, baby. Keep on loving me.
Oh,
Luther on a Valentine's Day. Can't beat it, right? I know. I understand. Yeah. Luther Vandross. Love songs. I love love songs. I really do. You like love songs, too. Brother Irv? Yeah, I do. I do.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. That I think that was Cheryl Lynn. Mm-hmm. That was with Luther, yeah. The first one you played.
Right.
Cheryl Lynn was, I think she's bad. So underrated. Mm-hmm. He was amazing. Amazing voice. But yeah. Luther Vandross was he was special, man.
Yeah.
And it's
ironic, yeah. He was writing songs for others and jingles and so forth, and you know,
yeah.
And didn't really throw his voice out there until, you know, later on in the whole process. And then, of course, as you said, he had, you know, serious ailments and things that affected him later on. But, man, for that time that he was here, bless him. Man, because he sure blessed us. He's shown up.
Oh, yeah, he did.
Us. Yeah.
That's good. So, that's good all day long.
Mm-hmm.
Amazing.
But yeah. No,
oh, but brother, getting back to this this Super Bowl really quickly, I just wanted to say something before I forgot it, if it's okay.
Sure.
I they actually spelled out Compton on the field in African. If you look at it again, you'll see that. And also another thing that people did not know is that I did the research and looked it up. Serena Williams, supposedly they had a half sister, and their
right.
sister was killed.
Right.
I did not know that, probably.
Yeah. I remember that.
Supposedly.
I remember that.
Everything is gang related. Mm-hmm. There was the Crips, the shooting, and she got in a crossfire, got killed.
Right.
And she's on there doing the Crip walk, which had a different meaning. See, the thing about it, everything that you see on television is looked at and has the different, it means something to someone else. It's important to the walk you walk, the journey you're on. These eyes that you and I look through, these are over 50-year-old eyes.
Yeah.
In other words, if I see a woman take her top off, I don't do a backflip. A young boy, 15, 16, 18, 20 years old, I'm like, what? Put your clothes on. And that's the maturity coming out of me.
Sure.
Because, you know, there's nothing new under the sun, Baba Oshi. And somebody somewhere has seen this before. So I think when I looked at this Super Bowl, I looked at it, and when I started realizing that this brother was trying to say something, and it wasn't coming through the microphone. Mm-hmm. It was coming through the visual. Because Samuel Jackson seemed like he brought back up the Django character.
And he did. Because he brought back up the Django. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And the Uncle Tom. Yeah.
I don't believe he's going to be asked to come back. I don't believe he's going to be. I think they're going to scrutinize these performances more. I think they're going to want to have their white folks going to have to approve their performance before they do it. Because I think it was a live performance. I'm not sure.
Yeah, of course it's live. Of course it's live.
Yeah, it was live.
You know, but
live is unpredictable.
Right. Because I can say I'm going to do this, and then I do something else, and so that's deep too, man. So let me play this particular piece that I found on YouTube, of course. And here's another piece. Trying to explain the Kendrick's Super Bowl halftime program. Check it out.
Unlike many halftime shows, this show didn't start with fireworks. It didn't have any flashy effects or a massive beat drop. It didn't have somebody flying from some string hovering around the whole crowd. No, it started with Kendrick Lamar standing in the street, rapping a cappella. Why? Because this is where every real rapper begins. On the streets. Spitting bars raw. No music. No auto-tune. No gimmicks. Just pure skill. The opening wasn't random. It was a statement in today's rap game. Lyrical ability doesn't matter like it used to. Now it's all about a catchy hook or a viral dance beat. But Kendrick, he's here to remind us rap is about content. It's about storytelling, and he is a true rapper. And that's just the first clue to the biggest protest in Super Bowl history, one that went right over most people's heads. But I'm here to break it down, and once you see the messages Kendrick left behind, you'll never look at this performance in the same way. Before Kendrick even touched the mic, the stage was already making a statement. The American flag wasn't made of fabric. It was built out of black people. A direct metaphor for how this country was built, literally, on the back of black labor. But the symbolism doesn't stop there. Look at the shape of the stage. What do you see? It wasn't random. That was a tic-tac-toe board. Why? Because the system, this is all just a game. A game where the rules are rigged. A game where we are the entertainment. A game where black artists, athletes, and entertainers are used as pawns to keep the cycle going, to keep us dancing, to keep us distracted, to keep us from seeing the real power structures at play. And then there was this moment. Did you notice how Kendrick's dancers all piled out of a car like clowns? That wasn't just choreography. That was a clown car. That was imagery. It was intentional. The term clown car is often used in politics when you have a bunch of candidates with no real power, no real voice, all fighting for something they'll never control. That's exactly how the industry sees black artists. They prop up whoever they choose, make them compete against each other, and laugh while they fight for the crown that they'll truly never wear. This was Kendrick's way of exposing the truth. The industry is a joke, and we're the ones that are being played. Now let's talk about hidden messages. They were everywhere, and you probably didn't even notice. So I'm going to break a lot of these down for you right now. First, Samuel Jackson playing the role of Uncle Sam. He was warning Kendrick to play the game, just like his role in Django as the house slave. The stage was designed like a Squid Game arena, symbolizing the rich exploiting the poor. Dancers dressed red, white, and blue, literally representing America's dancing to the system's drum. The stage was also shaped like a PlayStation controller, a direct nod to how black culture is manipulated and controlled like a video game. Mark this moment. Kendrick surrounded by black men in a prison yard setting, all harmonizing as he raps. This wasn't random. This was America's prison system disguised as entertainment. The system wants us dancing. The system wants us rapping. The system wants us in jail. But the system does not want us to wake up. And then we get the most important moment, the one that Uncle Sam was trying to make him forget, trying to keep him industry by doing songs with singers. They not like us. This was not just a song, this was a warning and an exposed truth about the industry. But you know who else made a statement during this? Serena Williams. And y'all better not have missed this one. Serena Williams, one of the greatest athletes of all time, was crip walking during Kendrick's performance. Now let me break this down, why this is bigger than just a dance. Serena was born in Michigan, but raised in Compton, the same place as Kendrick Lamar. Serena and Drake dated in 2015, and that relationship inspired Drake's 2016 song, Too Good. In 2022, Drake dissed Serena's husband, Alex, calling him a groupie on the song Middle of the Ocean. Crip walking isn't just a dance. It's a symbol of claiming territory, sending a message. So what was Serena saying? Serena was dancing on Drake's grave. Now let's talk about what that means. Dancing on someone's grave is a phase that means celebrating their downfall. Serena, in that moment, was showing the world Drake is done. His reign is over. The system that propped him up is crumbling, and she's not mourning, she's celebrating. Let us all be clear. This wasn't just about America. This was a direct shot at Drake, the man who has been used by the system to taint hip-hop, to push the toxic agenda Malcolm X warned us about. Drake is the industry's golden boy. He's been protected, pushed to the top, allowed to degrade women, push violence, and spread a message that keeps the culture in a cycle of destruction. Meanwhile, Kendrick has to fight for every inch of respect. And that's what he does. Kendrick says to all of them, game over. And that was his final message. It's time to wake up. The system has had control for too long. But will you, the people, will you see it now? This was the most important Super Bowl halftime show in history. And if you thought that was boring, that's just what the system wants you to think. And that means the system has worked on you. This is a wake-up call. Will you be the one to answer? And if you like the way I do it, will you please thumbs up the video, spread this across the realm, and of course, do me a favor, subscribe. And until next time, you know who it is. Peace and stay sexy.
Stay sexy. Okay. Peace out. Yeah.
Wait a minute. Sexy, wait a minute. You're going to buy me a drink if you're going to call me sexy. I mean, all my friends call me sexy. I'm serious now. I ain't glad. But no, Baba, he brought up some very good points, yeah. Baba Oshi. And it's according to where you're, like you said, if you sleep, this was boring.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't understand what he was saying. This is terrible, man. I want to see some booty shaking. I want to see what I usually see. I want to see shiny cars and diamond rings and big gold chains around your neck, you know. But I think what I'm not going to push back on anything that he said, because he was right on point. But the manipulation comes in the hand behind the curtain. In other words, Drake wouldn't be doing what he's doing if Drake wasn't handsomely rewarded with money. I'm not saying Drake wants to do this or loves to do it. He's really good at it, and everyone's going to come for the guy at the top. But the reason he's doing that, one of the reasons he's doing it, I would hope, would be because they're rewarding him monetarily.
Right.
But if he's doing this because he wants to do it, because he wants to try to do Urugu's bidding and tear down a race of people from the inside out, because he is one of these people. One caller called him mulatto or something. He's mixed with other. He has black mother, Jewish, or whatever. The point is, he's torn between who the double life that he lives in himself. I'm just saying.
Let me say this about that, because that has always been an issue, the mulatto in our history, because of what the European Urugu has been able to do, giving us a deep sense of inferiority while falsely giving himself a fabricated bullshit sense of superiority. And so then when we're affected by that and we want to be that, and so the closer we are to that, you know, I don't know if you have, I'm not quite sure, you probably have some Caucasians who took advantage of affirmative action programs. And I'm quite sure you had some who were American African based on the fact that they were very light skinned, but they passed. They would take that opportunity to come on as an American African or his Hispanic or whatever, but then still be Caucasian. You know, and I had this one cat, Kerry Rogers, never forget, dude, because I saw his sister. His sister identifies with being African. I saw her at Kwanzaa. When she found out I was a firefighter, she said, "Oh, you're a firefighter. My brother's a firefighter." I said, "Oh, really? Oh, who's your brother?" She said, "He said him," and I always called him undercover brother, you know.
Right.
Oh, you mean undercover brother? She started laughing, you know, because he's always identified with being Caucasian, you know.
Wow.
And to me, if you're that kind of situation, you know, how do you identify? You know. Do you identify with being us and are you sincere in that? Or do you identify with being Caucasian because you look most Caucasian? Do you identify that? And that's your prerogative, and that's your choice. But to me, you know, when you make that choice, you go all out. So, you know, there's been many who have done that. And of course, that's why in past time, I gave Sister, what's the sister's name? Freddie Washington. I give Freddie Washington much love, because Freddie Washington, she was in the first Imitation of Life, you know, playing that part. You know, she was in the first. Yeah. But Freddie Washington always identified with being us, because her, I believe it was her father was black, you know, and she experienced some things probably has growing up as a child, and she always identified. She fought for civil rights. This I'm talking about Freddie. If you know, have heard of Freddie Washington, you go to a Wikipedia or something like that, and look at Freddie Washington, the actress,
okay.
And you would see that. And she was in film in the in the 30s and 40s, But she always identified with being black. And it's how do you identify? That's how I look at it,
And Baba Oshie, when you said that, I'm going to look it up because that's what I do.
Mm-hmm.
But when you, when back then in the environment that she was in, to say she was black was not, I think, anything to celebrate.
No. At all.
Sandy,
at all.
Come on now.
Exactly.
I mean, you had people like, mm-hmm. like Bojangles, mm-hmm. who was a huge star. Bojangles mm-hmm. wasn't running around here talking about black crowds or nothing.
Mm-hmm.
You had huge people who were big stars back then. But mm-hmm. to say you were black was not a good thing.
No.
It brought a lot of what people thought was unnecessary. But in actuality, I stand on the shoulders of those people.
I say.
Because they made they fought and they took the abuse from their own people.
Mm-hmm.
Man, why don't you just go along and get along? Why are you always causing trouble? They say they labeling you a troublemaker. You're always talking that black stuff. Man, why can't we all just Rodney King? Why can't we all mm-hmm. just get along?
Yeah.
Well, we getting along, but there's nothing wrong with getting along, but why is it that the Caucasian is always on top of it? And why is it they keep saying I live in a poor neighborhood, Baba Oshie? But if it's so poor, why do the Koreans open stores over here?
Mm-hmm.
Why do the Indians own gas stations over here? Mm-hmm. If it's so poor. And it's the same way with Africa. Africa isn't poor, but they want you to believe that the flies are flying around children's stomachs.
Mm-hmm.
So that's all propaganda. It's all, and I'm Oshie, when this boy did this Super Bowl, which should be not only talked about, it should be analyzed.
Yes,
it should not only be analyzed.
Yeah.
We should have a class on Beyonce in college,
yeah.
in the college course. They should have a class on Kendrick Lamar's Super Bowl performance.
Exactly,
because
I agree.
That could be, come on, Baba, we could talk mm-hmm. about this until, because art changes the way you think.
Mm-hmm.
You thought a can of soup was a can of Campbell's soup until the white boy put it on a picture and put it in the art gallery. And then people came and stared at it for 2 or 3 hours at a time because it changed the way it can of soup.
Right.
You just put a bunch of them up there. But it's the way art is supposed to make you change the way you think, question something.
Mm-hmm.
And other than that, it's just advertisement.
Right.
And he didn't. I'm telling you, Baba Oshie, that halftime show.
Well, let me say this.
Something that. Go ahead.
Let me say this. That. I didn't think of it initially because I wasn't in tune. I don't play video games, rap. And so I really didn't look at it. I didn't look at it analytically. I didn't look at it in follow the esoteric and deeper meanings behind what was being stated. And now, this is really deep. But I hearken back to what Malik Shabazz, Brother Omawali, Malcolm X said. We need to make it plain. We need to be right up front. I ain't trying to give you a message you got to do deep thinking on. When we come on this mic, me and you, we're trying to make it direct. We ain't mixing words. We're making it direct.
No.
And I'm not to say that what he did was bad, because what he did was great. Because number one, he did it in the face of this society, this racist-ass society. And he stated it and the imagery that it happened, that's why when the Caucasian said, well, all those black people and it weren't, you couldn't find one white dancer. No, mom, because we did a DEI thing. We got rid of DEI and all the good dancers were black.
Well, because white people can't dance. I'm just saying they can't dance. They ain't got no rhythm. They ain't got no rhythm, that's just the way that works.
Do you remember when I did that comedy piece? Dude, why can't they dance?
Let me say this is something I heard yesterday. I have to research it a little more to make sure it's completely true. I don't think they would say it without that. The guy said that Kendrick Lamar
lives in L.A., and he pays $2,800 a month rent. He uses the spoons that were – the people left some dishes in the house. He uses those dishes. He drives an old old car, nothing, no fancy dancy car, a truck or something he has. He was the poorest person on the stage at the Grammys because he gives all his money away to start to help black people. He's taking care of families. This guy lives a very meager lifestyle. This guy just won 7 Grammys, I think. It is very meagerly. And you know, Baboshi, Ibrahim Touré does the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
He drives a used pickup truck.
Mm-hmm.
And when you think about even a Martin Luther King,
mm-hmm.
he didn't seek out a bunch of money. Malcolm X
right.
wasn't trying to make himself rich like everybody. So if you notice the trend in the people who have a lot to say about their condition and the condition of their people,
mm-hmm.
they usually are not people who are chasing the dollar.
No.
They're not trying to be an Elon Musk. If you see Elon Musk has no soul. You can see he has no soul because it's hard. I'm a photographer. I'm a professional photographer also. I went to school for photography. I went to college for photography. And you know how hard it is to ask somebody for some money? Even if you've done a service? No, don't worry about it. But that's not how capitalism works.
Mm-hmm.
Capitalism works. I do something, you pay me. I buy something cheap and sell it to you for more money. But capitalism gets to the point where Elon Musk is talking about cutting people's Social Security.
Mm.
How can
evil.
You do that with a heart and compassion?
Evil.
And you got built. He has enough money. It's more money than a small country. Mm-hmm. He can pay off these things.
Sure.
But the thing is, Baba Oshi, we're in a Rugu's place.
That's right.
We live in a Rugu's house. And when, as long as we can go on and on, like you say, we can have this show 3 days a week, and we will have things to talk about. I'm thinking about the big picture now, only because I know it comes back to us leaving. It has to, or you're just fooling yourself. You're an integrationist. You want to integrate into these people, and you don't want to leave because you believe that this is where you can make your difference. I believe the difference can be made in our homeland. You see, the Jews have dual citizenship. Why don't we have dual citizenship?
Mm-hmm.
Our homeland is Africa. Why shouldn't we have dual citizenship? And I'm telling you, Baba Oshi, you know like I know, Africa eventually will rule the world again.
No doubt.
Because it has all the resources.
Exactly.
Baba Oshi, you can't come over here and just take our shit and run us. Right now, they're running the white people into the sea. That's what they're doing in South Africa. When you take land without compensation, when you have no land, what do you have, Baba Oshi? That's why we're running around here in the United States as American Africans, because we don't have anything. Everything, we have no institutions.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Baba Kwa was very, very smart in saying that. Because unless we have institutions, we're always going to be dependent on somebody else. But we're in their house.
Mm.
But that halftime show showed me that the young people will be the warriors. The old people will be for counsel. Because that's what Samuel Jackson, he was running his mouth. But Kendrick was out there doing the damn thing.
Mm-hmm.
He was running around the stage. He was putting all that shit together. That's the war. Young people are for war. And I'm telling you, if you did not see the message that he sent, not only... You don't understand rap, but you're also blind because it was a visual. And then he had A minor. Did you understand that small letter A? They thought that was about him hitting on Drake because he said he's a pedophile. A minor, he likes minors or whatever, something like that. But in actuality, this other cat came on and said, if you go to C minor or C major, and then there's A minor, he said, but when you play the A minor, all the keys are white.
Mm-hmm.
Huh?
Yeah.
Huh?
The symbolism.
How deep you gotta be.
Yeah.
How deep you gotta be to keep that? All the keys are white. A minor, so he's calling Drake. You white. You're white.
Mm-hmm.
Stop trying to act like you're black. That's who you chose.
Well, see, that's the thing. How do you identify?
Wow.
The problem I have with that only is that
wow.
he is black. He has a parent that's black. And so if he identifies with being black, he's black. You know, I have a problem with that. But the thing is, to challenge each other to that degree and openly do it is counterproductive for us as a people.
Very.
You know, and the best thing that we, like I said, the best thing that we can do is squash all these beefs, you know, and realize the real, what the real problem is, you know, and that is Urugu and the mindset of Urugu. Let me get a caller in here, brother.
Wait, really quickly, Baba Oshie.
Sure, go ahead.
I just want to make sure the callers, I want the callers that from now on, I wasn't going to do this, but I think I just have to do it because it's really bothering me, and I'm on the air, and I just want everybody listening to know I'm going to need to be called by my pronouns from now on.
Huh?
I got one pronoun. Yeah, I got a pronoun, and I need them to call me by that when they call it. So when you call it and call by my pronoun, is African. Okay. So go ahead.
Right on. Africa. <Yeah. laughs> Good afternoon, good morning, good night. How you doing, man? How are you doing, brother?
I'm a good thing there, brother. I can't hear nobody. Oh,
hey, Brother Paul, are you there?
Yeah, can you hear me?
We can hear you well. Go ahead, my brother.
Brother Paul.
Oh, so it's so good to hear, man. I'm so elated to hear. Good morning to, or good afternoon to both of you. You know, I thoroughly enjoyed the analysis of what took the place at the Super Bowl, and this is what I cry for, because. You know, it's quite easy to throw things under the bus and throw out a baby with the bathwater. That's really an easy thing to do. But we must analytically analyze a great deal of things because our brother, a big brother, or the African.
Right on,
buddy.
African. He articulated it so well when he pinpointed the art form. You know, because I've come up in that era and I've played a good part in it.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Looking back, and I say my son's a rapper. I just say this, and I don't want to make it too long, but the first rap record I was introduced to, my father, who's the same age as you, Baba Ochi, he's the one who bought it. He bought Grandmaster Flash and the Furious Five.
Oh, man, that's the greatest one to me. Right on.
He brought that into our home.
Okay.
Now, all the music you play, Baba Ochi, because he's your age, obviously, he came from Jamaica and he's in the UK, but Jamaicans, I suppose, in that age group, they were influenced a lot by the type of music you play and all the artists you're into, even Funkadelic, James Brown, you know, all
you
those
can go on,
people,
yes, you can,
Bootsy Collins, you know, my dad had all those albums, and you know, he was into music, you know, he was a sportsman, he was into music, so I grew up with that, but that's the first. Rap record he brought home, and then the second one was I've Still Got to This Day, and I've got that record in a frame because it was signed by Afrika Bambaataa. That was a single and Afrika Bambaataa on a Soul Sonic Force, right? And funny enough, he bought that, and then I listened to the music, and it's mainly break beats, and I was like, wow, what is that? And then, you know, I was so intrigued by it, I was captured by it for some reason. And then you see how this thing's strange, because Afrika Bambaataa ended up coming to our youth center. I remember him coming down our high road because we were so excited by it. Our youth center, we had a brother who was one of the best mixers I've ever heard. And he came from the UK, but he was just so fantastic. And he was into that music thing, and he brought Afrika Bambaataa here. So the point I'm trying to make is I came up with that. We were deep into it. We were performing. We had a rap group.
Right.
You know what I mean? We were big from the beginning. We were in it.
Mm-hmm.
So the bottom line is I see things differently than people who are looking at it from the outside. And what I'm saying is, yes, it does need to be broke down because it's social commentary. And it's really foundation was for people who didn't have voices, who couldn't articulate themselves very well, who didn't go to university, who didn't have the ability to express themselves to an audience. So rap or hip hop, I should say, the dance element was a projection of a message. And also, you know, as I understood from coming out of New York, it was a way to let you, the dancing was called battling, right? So battling was opposing gang fights and it was opposing stabbings. Rather than go out and fight one another, stab one another, you dance it out, right? And you know, when I learned all that, I thought that was brilliant. I just loved that idea. You know, the graffiti. Graffiti was an expression. It was a way of articulating the art form, as you've rightfully put out, right? And, you know, yes, it's been commercialized. I don't 100% think that's a bad thing. I don't, because I remember that I watched a video with KRS-One, and he explained, right, when he was thrown out of his home and he was made homeless, he was thrown up by his mother, and he was sleeping on the streets. And when he found the genre of music, hip hop, and he was involved in it. And one thing he says, what I could relate to, right? He says that he was going to his own people to try and promote what he was trying to do. He didn't get the backing. I saw the same thing here. People didn't really know what this was. What is that? What is that with all that? That you know, they didn't. Right. They didn't really want to support it. And not only in that form. I've seen it in other forms. We see it right now, Bob. This is the point I'm trying to make, Ochi. You have a man come here who pulls water out of ear. Now, you've got to ask yourself a true question. Are African-Americans really seeing the potential and putting their money where their mouth is to back people like that? Are they really doing it? Because I don't think they are. And what I'm saying is, if we don't put our money with our mouth in, we allow others to step in. And for me, when I hear about all these meetings, what took place, that's a lot of bullcrap for me. What I saw was that we don't really support our own like we should support our own, okay? And so if we don't do that, then we allow others to step in and take over. And that's the reality for me. That's what I see all the time. You know, we can come up with ideas all day long, which we do. We have geniuses all over the place, but the truth is, we always think the white man's ice is colder. We don't really back them. That's the problem. That is really the problem. So, you know, I don't really follow Dre and this rapper. I don't really follow them as such. I don't really know their music. But what I do know from a foundation point of view, the idea is that those who don't have the ability to articulate themselves through universities, don't go into the formalization. It's a way for them to express yourself. So sometimes it's not pretty. Sometimes we don't like the things we hear. But really and truly, no one wants to hear the story of the poor man. No one really wants to hear the story of the broken man. No one wants to hear that. So he has to have some way to express himself. And that's the way I see it. So, you know, some of the music I don't like. I don't really like the swearing and the effing and blinding. But I'm not going to rule it out. That's me. I'm not going to cut it out because I hear that on the street. I hear that in people's homes. You know what I mean? I hear it behind the scenes. And some people have it built into them and they pretend that they don't. So, you know, I just appreciate, you know, both of you just breaking it down and giving, you know, because it even made me go to the net and there's an art in Public Enemy. They had a man called Harry Allen. I called him the media assassin. He was a journalist. And the whole Public Enemy setup for me was very fascinating in it that you had Chuck D, who was a university graduate, and then you had Flavor Flav. Flavor Flav was an addict. He came from the street. I think while he was performing, he probably still had his addiction. He was a bit of a clown. Professor Griff never got on with him because Professor Griff never, I don't think, and still, because I've heard him on the radio, still to this day, I don't think Professor Griff, all due respect to him, has really got what was going on. What Chuck D really did, he had Flavor Flav as a gimmick. To me, even to this day, that is a genius move, because what he was trying to say is that we're trying to capture all audiences.
Exactly.
I'm a university graduate, right?
Right.
And I'm speaking to a particular thing. I've got a real message here. Some of that message was coming out of the Nation of Islam, right? Mm-hmm. And he hit it geniusly, because that's what he was portraying, the message of Farrakhan. And he done that in these people's faces, just like my brother done on that performance. That's what Public Enemy was. That's what came from Chuck D. So what I'm saying is that was a genius thing. And then you had Flavor Flav there. Flavor Flav would reach a different audience, and that was what was behind it. That's why he allowed him to come on and play the fool. He wasn't performing for white people. He was trying to reach all the audience. And to me, that is genius, because we have to have them gimmicks. And true leadership has that sort of depth of thinking, able to plan strategies, able to reach everyone. Don't leave anyone behind. We're going to get them all. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to speak.
Right on. Thank you, brother. Good perspective, brother Paul. Appreciate that, brother.
Yeah, that's a hell of a perspective. I like that.
Yeah.
It's pretty good.
Yeah, Professor Griff is here. In fact, I've been trying to get him on the program, man. You know.
He'll come on.
Yeah. Yeah, because he's here in Atlanta. Me and him cross bases all the time. Good brother, man.
Mm-hmm. Real good brother. Yeah. And I saw that he had problems with a Flavor Flav. He just got tired of the other foolishness.
Yeah. Well, you know, sometimes you can only take buffoonery so long, man. You know.
After a while.
Right. Exactly.
If you don't like the clown, stop coming to the circus.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, and that's when he stopped coming. In the beginning, because Professor Griff, I've listened to some of his stuff on YouTube. He's pretty deep, brother, man. He's pretty deep. I got to give it to him.
Oh, yeah.
He sees Professor Griff, a different lens, which is fantastic.
Professor Griff's on point, man. Yeah, no doubt.
Yeah.
So, but I mean, you know, that's the thing, you know. I'd love to hear brothers and sisters articulate our condition from an African perspective, you know.
Mm.
And there's so many of us, but yet the masses of our people are in desperate need of that voice, you know, because really we're still the fringe. Those are those who think like we do, Brother Irv and Brother Paul, even though Brother Paul is, you know, where he is, and there's many of us other places around the world, but yet, you know, the predominant mindset of around the world is European. It's Caucasian.
Oh, yeah.
Because the dominant mindset is about material things. Once again, individualism, materialism, greed, and violence. That permeates a lot of what's happening. And so to many of us, to talk to somebody who has that, they don't want to hear this. They don't want to hear nothing like this. Because they're too busy trying to get theirs, you know. They're too busy trying to, you know, get that place that they want, that position that they want, that car, that woman, that man, you know. So,
Go ahead.
Go ahead.
I was just saying it's real easy to talk like this when you got a few dollars coming in, but when you're struggling, and you in this society. People can't see far down the road to see that if you sacrifice today and plant that seed, then you'll have a Ibrahim Touré, you'll have a Malcolm X, you'll have a Martin, but we got to plant the seed. In other words, you've had 50 years of hip hop, Baba Ocean, and these brothers ain't built one bank, one supermarket.
Teach on it. Exactly.
Oh, one school.
Yeah.
One nothing. They've all been individually made to be rich, but they've done nothing for the collective.
Right.
And you can tell because the collective is still hungry and spread and buck dancing for these white people.
They haven't pulled those monies together to say, listen, Brother Irv, the most important thing that we can do is to educate our young. I've been saying this for many, many years. It would be great if those brothers and sisters who have wherewithal like that, entertainers, be it singers, rappers, right. Football players, nice. Athletes, whatever, you know, and others who have money to pull money together to say, just like the European Jew who told a public school system, hey, my kids are not coming to school this day because this is Yom Kippur or this is Rosh Hashanah or this is, you know, whatever, right. you know. And I don't, and the European Jew's mindset was that I don't need you to teach my child about what it means to be a European. That's my position about what it means to be a European
That's
Jew.
Right.
I want you to teach him math. I want you to teach him science. Okay, those things. But the cultural instruction that he or she's going to get, they're going to get at the synagogue or center or whatever during the evenings or on the weekend. And that's what we need to do. That's what
that's
we
right.
need. We need to teach our young people. I said this, you know, ASCAC, which is, of course, an organization that I do love. But I told them, you know, I didn't get a chance to do it. I should have bum rushed them and did it at the ASCAC meeting I went to a couple of weeks ago. Is that
right?
And I proposed this at a national. I said, ASCAC needs to be the educational arm of our struggle. Y'all need to develop a curriculum, just like Brother Irv. This Sunday, which is a couple of days from now, in the Baptist church, I can't speak to others, but in the Baptist church, there's Sunday school. And Sunday school has a lesson. That Sunday school lesson is taught at the Baptist churches across this country. That Sunday school lesson will be taught. So I look at it like we need to have an African-centered curriculum that is taught on the weekend, on a Saturday, at a Saturday school or an evening school, twice a week, whatever. And this is the lesson that is being taught on this day, whether it is in Milwaukee, L.A., Baltimore, Atlanta, whatever. The same lesson. And we're all getting it. And we're all understanding and working on, you know, the part that is most troubling to me is the fact that we rely on this school system to teach our children. A system that has dogged us out, a system that has degraded us and denigrated, and we believe, and most of the teachers, even in schools that are predominantly, in most major cities, the public school system is predominantly us.
That's right.
Predominantly us, because white folks got their own schools. And what's messed up about that, some years ago, the conservatives found ways to get the money that is appropriated to public schools to go to their schools, those private schools, so they could get money. You know, this is a messed up situation.
They dumbed down our children by doing this no child left behind. That means if you're stupid, you're still gonna move up. And so when you graduate, you can't read. You can't read. You're no threat to society because the white children that went to the private schools are going to be your supervisor.
Right. And you know why? And you know why? Because they have merit. It's a merit system. They have the credentials. Let me get Jay in this. Brother Jay, what's up?
Hey, what's happening, OG? Nah, man, I just tuned in late, man. How's everything going?
Well, brother, how about you?
I'm hanging tough, man. Hanging tough.
Okay.
Listen, you know, the Saturday schools, you know, I got to say this, bro. I don't understand why we don't have them.
Yeah.
You got these pork chop chicken eating institutions that basically got the house shut down on a Saturday. I don't know why they don't open up the house on Saturday and educate these kids, because the bottom line is what's heading to this country. If your kid ain't educated on a certain level, you basically need to see him as a new slave, because that's what's heading. Slavery is heading back into effect in a very, very new kind of way that I don't even think we as a people understand.
Well, Well, I mean, you know, it really never left when you consider chattel slavery to the breaking of that, and then, of course, convict leasing, and chattel slavery, then to sharecropping, then to convict leasing, and then to the prison industrial complex. You know, all of it. I mean, you know, I used to do a parody that I would, when the children I worked with back in when I was in Milwaukee on my day off from the fire department, and talk to them about, like, say, for instance, you know, me and you've been working at this job, and because of foreign competition, whatever, the person who employed us said, you know, my profit margin ain't what it used to be, you know? Mm-hmm. So I'm not making the big money like I used to, you know? But he finds out there's a prison being built that's going to a private prison. And, of course, anything private is in the business of making money. So he goes to the prison. Sir. He says, hey, can you make this product? Oh, yeah, we can make this product, you know? You know, I'm going to have so many people. I said, what are you going to make this product for? Say, for instance, I had the product being made at $15 per piece. But he said, I can make that product for $5. Right away, I'm getting $10 profit right there. Okay? Right. And so he's saying $5. But the prisoners are going to be paid less than a 50 cent. So right away, the prison's making $4.50 on that product being made. So the prison's going to make money. The person who has the product going to make money. Everybody going to make money. But they ask. And so what's going to happen is that once he jobs it out to the prison, you know, we lose our job. The cat came in and said, hey, listen, you know, my profit margin ain't what it used to be. I know this is a family business. Many of you have been with my father when he owned a business. Some of you, and I'm sorry, but we closing down come Christmas time. Christmas time comes. Dang. Ain't no damn bonus for your ass but a pink slip. You Dang. And I, we at the crib. We getting high. We getting drunk. We getting mad. Okay? And I beat somebody's ass. I got a record. So what happens to me? What's going to happen to me? Exactly. I'm going to go into prison making the same product I made making a living, and a livable wage and an honest wage. Now I'm going to be in prison making that same damn product.
That's right.
It's crazy. Yeah.
The bottom line is we better wake up quick because the conditions that we're looking at and that we're facing, to be honest with you, most of us don't understand it or even realize what's being done to us in the systematic way that they're going about creating these illusions. Because the bottom line is, how do you ever justify taking away from people that don't have or have very little and giving it to the rich? And then you just basically take it, you know. But if you understand the history of the country, it's always been like that. There's never been no uprising to deal with people like Musk. I mean, Musk ain't even supposed to be, if truth be told, walking around in America. I mean, what this one man is doing, and there's a whole bunch of others behind him, who's doing it also, and who are probably dictating to him what to do. He's not supposed to be walking around in this country.
Well, why not? He can apply for American citizenship out of South Africa.
I'm not talking about that, bro.
Hold on, Jay, walking around
in the country, you missing what I'm saying.
Okay, then succinctly tell me, because we're out of time. Succinctly tell
he
me.
He need to be taking the dirt nap.
Okay, Jay, putting it that way. Okay, you're right on. You're right, but this is a friendly country. This is a friendly country for racist son of a bitches. This country welcomes them,
that's why he can
walk around in this place with his head held high, and doing the hell that he want to do.
That CEO was walking around and got shot in broad daylight.
He couldn't go to other countries and do what he's doing to those countries without him being Baba. He couldn't do it. Yeah. Nobody, you can't even say to me that there's a person, there's a country that has one person dictating the terms of the country moving forward that's not the president.
I agree.
Able to walk around and
that's
get
how that's how insane that's how insane this is, Jay. Listen, we're up against the time, man. So, hey, yeah, Jay, get Jay, your ass on the microphone early, okay, man?
I have to tell you later, man. But my old lady's not doing good, man.
Oh, I apologize. I apologize, brother.
I apologize, brother. When I got a little time to myself.
Okay, my brother. I apologize. Thank you, man. All right. Brother Irv, you got any last words, man?
No, man. Thanks for having me on. We'll talk tomorrow. We're up against it, bro.
All right. Thank you, Brother Irv. Thank you, Brother Jay. Always to Brother Paul and all those who listen. You know. Yeah. Bubba Butch. Always. All the people who listen. Sister Hybea. All of them. Appreciate it, Mama Nabantu, all the listeners. We end this program like we end all our programs with the words of Stephen Biko. The most potent weapon in the hands of the oppressor is the minds of the oppressed. This program is dedicated and committed to helping to free the African mind, but not just the M-I-N-D, but the M-I-N-E, because under the feet of African people lies all of the resources that everybody wants, think they can't do without, and they shown a hell don't want to pay for. Brothers and sisters, have a blessed and wonderful day. Shemhotep means go in peace. Asante Sana means thank you. Bibi Fahorie. Bibi Fahorie means our victorious destiny. Moving too fast, our victorious destiny. Brothers and sisters, we will be victorious. You have a blessed day. Hope to see you on Monday. Have a good weekend. Peace. Yeah, man.